Welcome to this podcast series on inclusion and education from the University of Leeds. Our research brings together experts in education, childhood and youth studies with an aim to promote equality across family, education, policy, legal and community settings. To read more about our work, please visit the School of Education website. You can find this link and others discussed during the podcast in the programme description.
Hello, my name is Luke McFarlane, and welcome to the Inclusion and Education podcast from the University of Leeds. Today we have a special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, Luke. Thanks. I'm Bridget Buick. My pronouns are she and her, but they and them is fine too. I'm an associate professor in psychological health, wellbeing, and education here at the University of Leeds. I'm also a BPS chartered psychologist, and I've got a particular interest and student mental health and wellbeing. Now, I'm really aware that there's more to me than just my job title and qualifications. And given what we're going to be talking about today, I thought maybe that would be a bit interesting for people to know about. Here at Leeds, I'm proud to be an LGBT plus role model. I'm flying the flag for bi-visibility. I was the first person in my family to achieve a pass in the New Zealand's equivalent of GCSE. And I'm the first to go to university in my family as well, something I guess I'm kind of proud of. You can probably tell from my accent that although I'm now a citizen of the UK, I'm also a Kiwi from Aotearoa, New Zealand. I guess in terms of my research experience, my PhD investigated how we can measure, monitor, and modify student mental health. And since then, we've seen the development of loads more specialist services for students. For example, here at Leeds, we've increased the capacity of our student mental health and wellbeing team, including expanding our team of counsellors. I'm also aware that although those things have increased, and despite these efforts, we continue to see a real rise in demand. So this got me thinking, is there something else we can do? I wanted to understand if there were ways we might adapt the delivery of higher education to better support student mental health and wellbeing. And that's where my idea for the fellowship came from, which is funded by the Leeds Institute for Teaching Excellence.
With your fellowship, you wouldn't describe what your current field of research is.
So this is always a bit tricky for me, but I guess at the moment, I'm all about understanding the impact of educational practice on students' well-being and sense of belonging. So what does that mean? Well, often we focus on what we teach when we're thinking about educational practice. But in my research and scholarship, I'm really interested in how we teach that. What are the systems and structures and practices that, if modified, would better support students to flourish and thrive? How can we, for instance, facilitate students' sense of belonging through our student education practices? How can we do that with policies and procedures? So I'm really looking at holistically how we can deliver higher education in a way that really supports and not hinders students' well-being.
Okay, thank you. Your research explores mental health and well-being challenges facing students. How do general aspects of daily life, e.g. like sleep schedule, nutrition, social life, have an effect on student mental health and well-being?
I spend a lot of time talking to students, and from a student perspective, these things have a massive impact. When I'm listening to what they think is made a difference in terms of their mental health and well-being, there's a whole range of things, but the things you've mentioned there definitely do make a difference. And I'm constantly amazed at the innovative ways in which students have worked to try and achieve some kind of work-life balance. And for some students, how they've adapted to living independently for the first time. And I think food and traditions, new traditions that students are creating that are centered around food are really important to some of those students. They really recognize the value in eating nutritious meals, but they also really value the kind of the social benefits of sharing meals with flatmates or friends and the cultural exchanges, actually, lots of them talk about that happen. And when I talk about cultural exchanges, I'm not just meaning internationally. There's a whole range of heritages and cultures in the UK as well, and family traditions as well. And many of the students I'm talking to are reflecting on how those kind of healthy meal plans, or that getting together with mates to share meals, they kind of go out the window during times of stress. So they come up with their own coping strategies to try and find ways of ensuring those things are embedded even when things get a little bit more stressful for them. And as part of our conversations, or as part of the conversations I'm having with students, I ask them to bring photos of their student experience. And I can tell you that meal plans, flat celebratory dinners, disaster baking that's gone on through COVID, it all features quite a bit. And I don't ask them in particular to bring any of those things. But clearly for our students, they really do see that food and nutrition plays a real role in their own well-being. I know you also asked about sleep, and yeah, you're completely right. Sleep is important for both our physical and our mental health, right? And when we're sleep deprived, it's harder to learn. It depletes our ability to adapt to new challenges. When we're tired, we simply don't have the bandwidth to deal with things that come our way. I've been really interested, through your question, I'm reflecting now, that in my most recent conversations with students, sleep hasn't been mentioned that much. But students are talking about changes, particularly this academic year that's just been, because of the COVID-19 restrictions. And they've talked about how they've had less demands socially on their time. So there's been more space for other things. So it might be that means that, as well as having more time for studying, which some students have definitely mentioned, that kind of general chilling and relaxation and being able to get into a routine, because so many of us have been doing the same kind of things day in, day out, that's meant that sleep isn't featuring quite so much in the student narratives.
Reflecting on my own time as an undergraduate, sleep was something that I was lacking a bit of, I would say. In comparison, do you think COVID-19 has had a positive effect on the undergraduates' sleep now, because they probably have had less things to do and less time to go out?
Yeah, I guess reflecting on the conversations I was having, because obviously my fellowship started before the COVID-19 pandemic. So reflecting on my conversations with students earlier, I don't know that is the case for all our students. It's such a diverse population, it's hard to generalize. But I do think that students feel the real pressure of deadlines and timelines and exams, and getting into a routine can be a real challenge, especially if you've moved to a new city. For those students who come to Leeds for the first time and that they're studying and living in shared accommodation, for instance, then they're having to come up with a whole new kind of routine. And they talk about the stress on the competing demands on them in terms of sleep, social life, studying. And I think it's really easy in those situations for us to fall back into our old habits. And for some of us, our old habits might be procrastination through lying in and sleeping too much. But for other people, it may be that our bad habits are working all the way through the night and into the early hours of the morning. So I'm not sure that it's true that a whole generation of students are now managing better when there's all these different competing tasks. I think it's that COVID-19 restricted what we could all be doing in that time. And so people just weren't out of the house as much, which meant that it was maybe easier to structure and organize things in a way that meant that people were able to sleep when they needed to sleep, and then they could study at times that was most efficient for them, I guess. So it's maybe a bit of both. Definitely, I'm really impressed with how students are articulating the coping strategies that they have, and their reflections around sleep and nutrition are really nuanced. They're way better informed than I was when I was an undergrad and even a postgrad student. So I think there has been an increase in awareness about health and well-being and mental health and the importance of sleep, but I don't think that means we've cracked it. Those of us who like to work late, I think, are still finding it a struggle to make sure that we have a structured kind of sleep routine.
Thank you very much. So your research has recently explored how the COVID pandemic has had an impact on students' mental health and well-being. What would be your advice to students currently at university who will be entering next summer to protect their mental health and well-being?
Again, if I reflect on the conversations I've had with students, I guess I'd say accept that some bits of university will be difficult. Students have shared with me their surprise, or some students have shared with me their surprise at how hard some aspects of their university experience actually has been. For many students, they do believe university has given them some of the best times of their lives, and they recount really excitedly what some of those might have been. But that didn't mean it's all been perfect or that it's been easy. And some students actually use the phrase, it has been the best time, but it's also been the worst time of their life. And they wish that at the beginning, someone had told them that it's okay when things don't go quite as smoothly as planned. And some of that, when students are talking, is around learning to moderate the amount of activity that they're doing. There's so much going on at uni, academically, socially, personally. And students talk about the pressure they feel to make the most of their university experience. And they speak of an almost anxiety of kind of missing out on important opportunities. And those are a whole range of opportunities. They could be to build up their CV, social opportunities to meet new people or to try out new things or activities. And some students, though, express regret at not working out sooner that they can't do everything on offer. And it can be really difficult to say no to opportunities or to take a break with an essay deadline looming, for instance. But most of the students I talk to say that taking breaks, being selective with how they spend their time, it all helps their mental health and well-being. So I guess that'd be one piece of advice: to enjoy your time at university, to take advantage of some of the opportunities on offer, but don't feel you have to do everything, and that it's okay to decide that some opportunities aren't right for you right now. If I'm allowed a second one,
sure.
I'd also say find people to talk to. So lots of students say they felt like they were the only ones who didn't understand what was going on at the beginning of uni. You know, there's so many new things going on, new ways of working, new ways of doing things. And lots of students, especially in those kind of early days, although for some of us, it's also when we go into year two or when we begin our taught postgraduate studies or research postgraduate studies, they just feel that they don't belong either at university or on the course. And some of the students talk about feeling like there's no one like them who's around. But oftentimes when students are telling me these things, I end up hearing loads of stories where those same students have said, I wish I'd said something earlier. And when they have spoken up, they find students who are feeling just like them around them, that they're not on their own. And for some students, that might have been talking to course mates, or it might be if they're living with other students, with their flatmates. It might be just some random conversation that's sparked up on campus or online. But that isn't the case for everyone, that they are, and through those conversations they learn that it's not just them that are feeling that way. And some students really struggle to find those connections, though, and so when they don't find those people around them, say on their course, then they began to feel even more isolated. And I'd really encourage everyone to seek out places and people that they click with. So it might not be on your course. You might be that it takes a little while to find the people on your course, but there may be other spaces and places around the university where you can connect to people more easily and you feel like you can kind of breathe and be your authentic self around. Our students feel about that. Students talk about that, finding people who they just kind of click with, their people, their group. And if none of that's kind of working, then don't give up hope. Also think about the other sources of support that you can have. We've got members of staff who are there. It might be your personal tutor, a lecturer, someone from student education support. There's always the student union you can go to. And it's really easy to feel alone in a crowd. And so talking to others and exploring the people around you and talking to different people is a really great way of working out where it is that you find that sense of belonging at Leeds and where you can really begin to understand that there are other people who are feeling a similar way to you. So I guess that's my other piece of advice, that I would encourage people to speak out and to talk to other people, because quite often there's more people out there struggling with the same thing as you.
With the stigma around ill health, what could be done to get people to engage more with mental health and well-being support? Reflecting on this, is there any possible way to increase engagement of international students from culture where mental health is not frequently discussed and others who may feel excluded from the current provisions, e.g. those with learning disabilities?
That's a great question. I think we could think more creatively, maybe, about what might be the right support at the right time and what might be alternative spaces and places to provide that support. I don't think it's the case that there's likely to be one solution that's going to meet everyone's needs. And it's really easy to think of international students or students with disabilities as homogenous groups, and that just, it isn't the case. And for some of those students, the provision at the moment will be the provision that they relate to resonates with them and that they're happy accessing and feel comfortable accessing those supports. And for some of that, it's just there's massive diversity, right? Even in the across the entire student body. So I think there's a few things we could do. One is to raise awareness of the support that is available. When I'm talking with students, some of them still aren't sure how to access support. So there's definitely mileage in raising awareness of what is on offer. And we might look at how we do that and the modes of which we do that, the language we use, and the timing as well. Because quite often we think when we've told people about it in one place that that's sufficient. But if you didn't really feel like you needed that support at that time, it's unlikely you're going to keep everything that's on offer at the university in your head, right? So I think continually raising awareness in different ways would be one thing that we could do. I think we also need to work with students to identify and fill in the gaps. So where are the gaps? Where are people feeling like their needs aren't being met? And I'm not saying that we're going to be able to meet all of them. We're not going to be able to. The university isn't a mental health provider, it's a higher education organisation, but there will be support that we can offer within the constraints of what we have. And I think sometimes we can think really creatively about how to fill in those gaps. So if I use an example, one of the initiatives to come out of the Pedagogical Wellbeing and Compassionate Curriculum Fellowship is I Belong Creative Connections. And Creative Connections is a collaborative effort. It's co-created with students, artists, student interns, and university staff. And the idea is to provide a space for students who are struggling to make meaningful connections, many of who also report struggling with increased levels of anxiety and distress, for example. And it creates a space where they can come together and meet new people through a shared experience of arts and culture. So it's an example of how we might use creativity and culture to support well-being and to build sense of belonging as well. Another example, which has been developed by students at Leeds, is the Wellbeing Wednesday initiative. So a space for students and staff to come together to think about the kinds of activities that they might want to be doing or the focus they might want to be doing. But by having a space where people can drop in and out of on a particular day of the week, that creates that sense of, you know, these are conversations that we're having at Leeds, and we can signpost to other things as well as being a peer support network for one another. We might also think about how we might make the formal support spaces more inclusive. And I know that the University's Counselling and Wellbeing Service is currently supporting student-led projects that are looking at inclusivity and access to support. Because if we can understand how wellbeing and mental health is positioned within a diverse range of heritage, cultures, and faiths, then we'll be better placed to develop support that is inclusive. And I think student voice is key to our successfully decolonizing mental health and wellbeing support at the university. I also think that during the pandemic, we've learned some great lessons about how modes of delivery can increase accessibility for some students. So while some students most definitely benefit from face-to-face support, we have other pockets of the university student population where actually online has been a real benefit to them. You know, for instance, our commuter students might find it easier to access appointments on days that they're not on campus once we return to campus. It could be our medical students who are on placement who again aren't on campus. Some of our students who aren't ready to enter into that counselling space on physically on campus, but who are quite feel empowered enough in order to access online support. So I think we can also look at the ways in which we can use technology to make these spaces more inclusive. That's not to say that online is going to work for everyone, or that just because someone wants to be online that that's how it should be. And we need to really be looking at the needs of our student population. But I think offering online, face-to-face and blended, and thinking about formal and informal spaces is one way that we could increase that inclusivity.
Thank you very much, Bridget, for coming on to the podcast. And the next podcast should be in about 2 weeks' time. So I'll talk to everyone later. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. For more information about our work, please visit the School of Education website. If you have any questions about our research, or if you would like to study with us at the University of Leeds, you can contact the Research Centre Director, Professor Michaelis Kontopodis, for further details. You will find all relevant links and contact details in the programme description.